can look at different gender differences, ethnic differences, et cetera. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not just the morph, and it's not certainly not promising a result, but it's communication, it's screening patients, and it's performing research that I think are. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast with me, Dr. Cameron McIntosh. We're in season three. We're doing face-to-face interviews. And I'm in Berlin at the Global Masters Meeting for IMRHIS, managing to pull together a couple of guys who I haven't spoken to before and other guys who have, and it's been very interesting. And one of the people today is who was the most watched and listened to podcast from last year was Derek Steinbachus. Derek, thank you so much for availing yourself for another chat.
Absolutely. Yeah. Such a pleasure and good to connect again.
Yeah, man. Listen, so it was so good to see how many people were interested in this whole orthognatic chat we had last year. But today, I want to explore something a little bit more different, which is the whole thing about 3D and 3D printing and morphing, etc. I know it's one of your passions. So maybe you want to tell the listeners a little bit, before we get into that, what's been happening in your life in the last year?
Yeah, those are all good questions. And, you know, the biggest thing really is I've had a slight shift of practice location where I'm totally on my own in my own center and my own surgery center and clinic space. So, you know, that's been good and it's going really well. And it's enabled me the chance to develop and create my own 3D room to do some of the things that we're talking about.
Yeah,
I know we touched on it last time, and one of my talks here talked a little bit about cone beams and 3D cameras, simulation, morphing, and patient education and those kinds of things. So,
and what has it been like for you now to be on your own, eh?
Yeah, no, it's good. Now it's a way to really focus on these types of cases and offer boutique care and really control the patient experience from, you know, their initial inquiry all the way through consultation, surgery, and the post-operative care. So it's, you know, it's great. And it's the ultimate in autonomy, especially with one's own surgery center, to be able to control that entire process.
Well, that's what we did. We built a slightly bigger center in South Africa, and we've been open for almost 2 years now. And it's just, it's so nice to have your own place.
Absolutely.
So do you have an OR in the surgical center?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
And where is that?
It's still in Connecticut. It's kind of the midpoint of Connecticut. It's about 70, 80 miles from New York City, maybe 100 miles from Boston.
Okay.
Still close to the center of the state. And, you know, so we get people coming from all over the place. It's really convenient, easy to fly to and get to.
And Derek, you're a passionate teacher and you're good at what you're doing, you're teaching. I mean, I've absolutely loved listening to your talks here. Is there a possibility for people to come and visit you and also learn or not?
No, there is. Yeah, for sure. And right now we have a research fellow from Cambridge in the UK. We have visiting doctors and, you know, we're starting to get students, medical students and residents from different backgrounds that are going to be coming and shadowing as well. So, definitely easy and possible to do. And we're still continuing some of these academic pursuits.
And how do they reach out to you?
Via email or Instagram. And I can give you all that information to put in the show notes if that's helpful.
Okay,
I
will do that. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more about your 3D room.
Yeah, so, you know, I do a lot of maxillofacial and bony sort of facial implants as well and orthognathic surgery in addition to rhinoplasty. You know, those are my two biggest areas that we focus on. And, you know, so in our 3D room, we have a cone beam CT scan, which is, of course, great for orthognathic and required for those types of workups and planning. But I think it's very, very beneficial and valuable for rhinoplasty as well. We don't obtain a CT on every rhinoplasty patient, but having those tools at our disposal and in addition to some of the endoscopy, nasoendoscopy type technology as well is very helpful. And I think it goes a long way with communication and education to the patients as well. So, you know, a portion of it is certainly the CT analysis in addition to physical exam and endoscopic exam. But then the big component, especially for aesthetic rhinoplasty, which is the majority, you know, of what we're doing, is having that 3D camera. We take 2D films, but having the 3D camera is great because you're sitting with the patient and or their family members.
If I say 3D, is that the Vectra system that you
It's
use?
the Vecta
Because it's the
system.
same system that I use.
Exactly, precisely. So it's a great system, and in real time we look at the morphology and the anatomy of the patient together, and it's frequently the first time that they've really seen their face, kind of stepping outside of it, because people take selfies or look in the mirror, but it's kind of that mirror image and doesn't really have the same capability of the 3D camera where you're rotating it and looking at from different angles what the morphology is. So that's, after the physical exam and talking a bit about their goals and what they want done, this is what we do. And we look at those images and just have them take it in. I don't say much. We rotate it and then start having, give a little bit of silent time for them to take it in and comment on what they see before I start, in with my diagnosis and things that I may see that,
Isn't it? I find one of my favorite views on Vectra is showing the asymmetry of the face, because you can have this patient come in and they're demanding all sorts of things, and then you show them just how asymmetric their face is, and there's that stunned silence. They're like, "Who's that on the picture?"
Yeah, exactly. And it's, I use it a lot too for some of the facial aging patients and starting from the top down and looking at ptosis and eyelids and brow position and rhytids and dark circles and jowls, in addition to the nose and the jawline and lips and ears and those kinds of things. So it's very powerful and very communicative with a patient, because I think it's important that they understand what it is that we're seeing and what the common goals are.
So a question I have here, Lissandro Martins from Brazil, what he gets his patients to do is actually send him pictures of what they would like their nose to look like. What are your thinking around that?
Yeah, I don't necessarily request that, but plenty of patients will come with those types of things, which is, sometimes instructive and sometimes they're totally unrealistic. If it's a very thick-skinned patient and they're showing patients of very thin skin, post-op results or maybe filtered results and those kinds of things, we need to take that into consideration and make sure the patient is aware that some things are achievable and some things are not achievable. And I think that's also very powerful with a 3D camera that we can try to say, these are things that can be achieved and these are things that cannot be achieved.
So, trying to change and track slightly is tech in the firm of like med tech. In a way, maxillofacial surgery is so far ahead of the rest of us. Like piezo is kind of came into rhinoplasty a few years ago, but they've been done for more than 2 decades with you guys and 3D printing, et cetera, et cetera. I had a very interesting discussion with Brian Wong the other day, and I'd really be interested to know what your thoughts are on this whole idea of cartilage printing. Do you think that's something that's going to be coming? What are some of your thoughts around that?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. That's kind of tangential to this for sure, but yeah, very interesting. And people have done that and presented a lot on this related to ear reconstruction or ear construction for sure. I think certainly some of these scaffold or scaffold material and potentially seeding it with stem cells or seeding with cartilage, maybe the next thing on the horizon before actually just printing cartilage, or maybe it'll be printing scaffolds and then you seed in the cells. You seed with cells in the lab, and then once those cells become more viable, then you can implant it. But I think, yeah, that would be great. It would save donor sites. You could maybe print things exactly the dimensions that you need or want. And that, I don't think that's too far away, actually.
Derek, it's so I'm friends with a lot of MaxFax people back in South Africa, like really good mates of mine, and with our society, with SORSA, et cetera, we're very open to working with specialists around like the table on the nose. My question is, why is it that like a maxillofacial surgeon has got such incredible skills and understanding of the anatomy of the face and stuff, but then just this little, and I'm generalizing now, a lot of the guys then don't want to touch the nose, and I'm like, bro, why can't you touch the nose? You know so much about the face. So why do you think that is? Or am I completely wrong in what I'm saying now?
Yeah, and I think there's differences in different regions. That's been some of the discussion here at this meeting, is that some of the European places, there's no comfort or training in doing jaw surgery or orthognathic surgery, or even we had a session on cleft rhinoplasty. And to my way of thinking, if you're doing the rhinoplasty and the lip needs to be revised, I certainly do that at the same time.
Yeah.
And then I think of things in context from infancy through childhood, through when they're ready for orthognathic surgery and rhinoplasty. And I think having those things sequenced appropriately and executed and performed well sets the stage for the best rhinoplasty results. So
yeah.
I think, yeah, it's a two-edged sword in that
all
these things are interrelated, and whether or not one does all of the things, I don't think is an absolute and necessary, but certainly collaborating with people that are very comfortable with the nose or are very comfortable with the bone grafting or speech surgery or orthognathic Lafort surgery. And if you happen to do all of them and do all of them well, I think that is a good paradigm. But I think having those components at the patient's disposal is ideal.
Yeah. Now that's very inspiring. I mean, I think there's for the listeners out there, I think the take home message here is become excellent in what you're doing, you know? Oh. So different question. On your WhatsApp profile, I see there's a picture of you. It looks like you're on a boat. Tell me a bit about that, man.
Yeah. So I'm in kind of coastal New England area. It's somewhat New York like, it's somewhat New England.
Yeah.
And there's certainly a lot of boating and things of that sort. Unfortunately, not year round, because the winters can be pretty dreadful and cold. And unless you're a fisherman or a lobsterman, you know, people aren't going out on their boats past November or October even.
Yeah.
But in the summer, it's great. And, you know, we're at a place of four seasons where, you know, you can really have different experiences depending on the type of time of year. So
Derek, one last question. So how do you manage now? I guess it's easier now that you have your own place, but you travel quite a lot and you go to various conferences and you're speaking, etc. How do you get the balance right?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's always a challenge, I think, but I think it's important to continue to participate in these, both to share the knowledge that we have or I have or have developed over the years and learn from other colleagues. I think, you know, that's what our patients expect, and that's what's best for patient care and getting the best results possible. So obviously you can't travel every single week or month, and, you know, there is a balance to that. And I love performing surgery and giving patient care, so that takes the priority. But, you know, some of these experiences and meetings are priceless, really, in the amount of knowledge that we get and are able to share with everybody.
Yeah, awesome. Derek, it's so nice to chat to you again, man.
Yeah, sounds good. You know, I think we maybe sold short a little bit some of the 3D tools. And I know there's maybe I can ask you, you know, I've heard some controversy here or in Europe that people are uncomfortable performing a morph of what the patient may potentially look like. And I'm, you know, wondering your thoughts about
that. Great. Thank you for asking that question. So my side on the 3D side is the cone beam CT scanner and then the photography. But I've got both 2D and 3D photography. So generally, let's just chat about the photography side of things. The 2D photographs, we've got them absolutely standardized with mirrors that the patient looks into. And I try and use those more for presentations, because I sometimes think with a Vectra, there can be some slight differences compared to the 2D. So the Vectra that I use is absolutely for morphing with patients. And I think the important things for me is to be able to, so I've got a lady who takes the photographs and just will cut just to the face, for example. Then I will go through with the patient in the simple standard that it has of actually analyzing the face and then saying, what could we potentially do? And I actually give the patients those pictures because I think it's important. On it, it said it's a simulation. We don't know if it's going to happen. But from my side, I feel it's really important to do that. So when I'm traveling and consulting, I don't have the time to do it. I'll do it late in the evening. But when I'm at my actual practice where people are, we'll morph. So I think it's crucial. And then what I do is those same images, we print them out and we take them to the OR with us and up against the wall so that you can actually see where you're at. And for me, the golden thing is you must under promise and over deliver, because It's so easy to make a nose look beautiful on the computer, but when you've got to go do it on the table, it's a different thing.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and that's the point I'd want to definitely get across is that these tools are not to guarantee that this is what our result will be, but it's more to get on the same page and serve as a communication tool because, once a patient takes a look and sees maybe two options, then they can mull it over, think about it. I do the same thing. I have them take pictures if we have two options and think about it between the consult or the pre-op visit and the ultimate surgery and decide, do they want more of a supertip break, less of a supertip break? You know, those types of things. And I think it's also a good screening tool because if you're finding that patients want, you know, every little pixel changed and every little, then sometimes that can be a red flag for body dysmorphia. And if, you know, maybe not understanding that this is just a 3D photo that you can only do so much with the image and that sort of divide or disconnect can sometimes be a red flag for, you know, maybe a patient that can't be satisfied or unrealistic expectations. But it's incumbent upon us because you, like you say, you can do anything with the pixels to, and we have to know that what's biologically possible, what's not possible, and make sure that we're not reflecting something that we don't think we can achieve. And then the second point I would say is just that how valuable this is because it's an objective tool for research and following the outcomes of patients. And, you know, we've done several studies looking at edema, how quickly does edema and what type of modifications to edema, you know, can we see with time in different graft types. For instance, you know, we looked at septal extension graft versus columellar strut and followed this for 18 months and show differences from one subgroup to another. You can look at different gender differences, ethnic differences, et cetera. So, you know, it's not just the morph and it's not certainly not promising a result, but it's communication, it's screening patients, and it's performing research that I think are.
No, absolutely. So, and then the other side of the thing is the whole cone beam CT scan side. So, I've got various opinions about that. For me, it's been a game changer. So, to be able to have this in the practice, both for myself and for the patient. So if we speak just purely on the patient side of things, so I'm obviously otolaryngology trained, so we're much more used to working inside the nose. But a patient, the two key things for me is it only costs about $130 if they don't have insurance for the scan. It's done instantly, and the amount of radiation compared to conventional CT is so much less. So in terms of the patient, it's a no-brainer that you can do it. So by far the majority, close on 100% of my patients I'll operate will get a cone beam CT. From my side, why it's important is it's a diagnostic tool, but it's also a safety tool. So that if for example, say that the septum is so severely deviated, you can't even endoscopically look inside one side of the nose. And then you do a CT scan and you see that there's a conical bullosa and there's a maxillary sinusitis and all sorts of things going on that you can't see. So diagnostically, that's really important. It's also important for the surgical planning because I can now, for example, see how much cartilage is there to potentially harvest. What are we going to do if we're going to possibly be doing a preservation technique, et cetera, et cetera. But also that scan then is in theater for me. So I can, during surgery, be seeing what I'm seeing in the patient. So I think CT scans in my mind is an absolute essential. What was interesting for me is after years of getting reports from the radiology colleagues, it's incredible what the difference is between a guy who can maybe write a 3-page report and a guy who writes a 2-sentence report. So what we ended up doing is with two of my radiology colleagues and a couple of guys from the States, we actually got together and we worked out what we've called the rhinoceros criteria. And I'm actually going to be presenting about that in Verona. So it's been published. And the idea is it's just guidelines for radiologists to be able to understand what we as the rhinoplasty surgeons would like them to report on. And it's been very interesting. We've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. It'd be great to take a look at that criteria. So, do you have every one of your CBCTs read by a radiologist?
Not all of them. If we have a problem, we can get them done. But they are for me to be able to use in theater most of the time.
Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent.
Derek, it's been great to chat to you. Thanks for everything you're doing for the world of rhinoplasty and facial plastics and orthognatic and all the stuff you do. And I really hope you have a great year for the rest of this year.
Awesome. You too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Good chatting.
Lovely.